Hello and welcome to Cadenza. I'm David Ozenberg, your host. WWFM has entered into partnerships with many top classical music organizations, venues, and ensembles over the last months, and one we're especially proud of is our broadcast programs with the Orchestra of St. Luke's, that esteemed ensemble that was formed by musicians 38 years ago as a chamber group, and then in 1979 expanded out and made its orchestral debut at the Caramore International Music Festival. They are still going strong and still contract and expand forces as the concert or repertoire dictates. They have garnered many awards and respect through their concerts, still approximately 70 over a season at Carnegie Hall and the Morgan Library Museum and Brooklyn Museum, and their vaulted discography. They now have a home as well, as they are located at the Domenis Center for Classical Music in Midtown Manhattan, a building that provides state-of-the-art rehearsal and recording space for musicians and ensembles ranging in size from soloist to full orchestra and chorus. You're listening to the St. Luke's Chamber Ensemble performing the final movement Allegro from Franz Joseph Haydn's Symphony No. 7, nicknamed Noon from his Morning, Noon, and Evening Symphony set. Over these decades, the Orchestra of St. Luke's has had three titled conductors: Sir Roger Norrington, Sir Charles McCarris holding the title of music director, and Donald Runicles. And after a debut concert with the orchestra at Caramore back in the summer of 2011, they now have named their fourth titled conductor, a four-year tenure, and that choice is my guest today, Maestro Pablo Harris Casado. Mr. Harris Casado was born in 1977 in Granada, Spain, so you can do the math. Though not into a musical household, he quickly gravitated to music, singing in local choirs, and becoming enamored with early music of the Renaissance and Baroque. Studies with Harry Christophers and Christopher Hogwood followed, as did his formation of an early music consort and his group called Compagnia Teatro del Principe, devoted to resurrecting neglected and forgotten repertoire of the Spanish court of the 18th century. But my guest also took an intense interest in modern and contemporary music. He formed his own contemporary group while in school. There he also studied acting. Conducting became his main focus around the age of 18 and has never abated. A performance of a work by Stockhausen in Lucerne drew praise and admiration from Pierre Boulez and Peter Etvus. He led youth orchestras, regional orchestras in Spain, such as in Girona, and the leap to guest conducting soon found him on the podium in front of the top orchestras of the world, including calls in Chicago, London, and Berlin. Opera has also featured prominently in his activities. He is a scholar and fluent in five languages. His appointment to the principal conductor post of the Orchestra of St. Luke's seemed to be destined, and he conducted them again this summer at Caramore, but will make his season debut in February at Carnegie Hall. We'll go through the upcoming OSL season on this program. I met up with Maestro Harris Casado at the Domenis Center back in August. Here this afternoon with conductor Pablo Harris Casado, who is now starting your first of a four-year tenure as principal conductor of the Orchestra of St. Luke's. First of all, welcome to that.
Thank you.
If I was sitting here with any other conductor and made the following statement, and the statement would be, your life has been almost constant conducting for 18 years. Our listeners might think or draw the conclusion that on your next birthday, your cake would have more than 40 candles on it. But it doesn't, because you are not even that. You're in your mid-30s. So the first question is, if you look at these 18 years, especially maybe the crescendo and accelerando in the last six or so, but has this time been controllable? Have you felt the whole time that you know what's going on? It's the direction of things hit you blindsided? Have you managed these quite whirlwind years?
I think this is one of the most exciting ingredients of my life, but always, because I've never been good. I've never pretend to plan my life or to have like long-term targets or objectives or dreams, whatever. I was always thinking about what's next tomorrow, what's next week. And after I finished the concert, I was thinking and the next repertoire to do, to explore. This has been always my motto. So in that way, there are many unexpected things who come across this path. And this is one of the most exciting, as I said, elements that after a few steps, you have to decide which direction to follow. Yeah. And of course, this is not always easy. And you have to make choices more and more and more. And now there are many choices in the path there are more and more. So you have to also, let's say, to say no to many things that you would like also to do, and to follow by your instinct or your experience that other way. But this is exciting. I think this is something that I hope will keep happening.
But there have been times in the last years where all deserved by you from what you've done, but there have been times when you had to be doing something, whether standing in Berlin or whatever, where you sort of pinch yourself and say, this is incredible.
Yeah, it is. It does happen. But I always say that for me, I don't feel that my life has changed that much, because yeah. I started conducting 18 years ago, and it's been always intense, and it's been always nonstop. And so I feel like the progression has been a kind of a very quiet one. But now, of course, feeling that I do the same, basically, like conducting a lot, traveling and studying lots of music. Now I say, gosh, I'm now at the Philharmonie. I'm in my dressing room and waiting for the rehearsal to start. I see the monitor in my dressing room, and it's Berlin Philharmonic sitting there with all those gods of the flute or the oboe or in each instrument. Or when I'm in New York, like now, I do think every time I come here and I feel like home, because this is my real feeling. It's not just a kind of a saying that, no, this is now home for me. Really, I feel comfortable as when I'm in Granada, or it's, of course, very in a different way. And when I think that Lincoln Center, yesterday I went to a concert at the Mosley Mozart Festival, and I entered into Avery Fischer Hall, and it was like feeling home again. Or Carnegie Hall, because I've been there a lot. And I think this is incredible that I'm familiar to that, and this is part of my life. And this is when I pinch myself and I say, wow, this is... And I don't want to lose that feeling.
Well, anyone who can call New York home that quickly, I applaud. Your resume is fascinating. It's also unique. I mean, I've had a lot of conductors and performers on over the years, but I don't want to leave any of this out, but I'm going to do this quick run. I mean, you start with a vocal background, early music performer and scholar, contemporary music champion, passionate about contemporary music, performing it, studies with some very influential musicians who are very specialized on different spectrums, your own compositions, youth orchestras, even a little bit of acting and theatrical studies. And so this is not the normal bricklaying path of a symphonic conductor, you have to admit. Mm-hmm. So the question is, when you either speak with, work with, or even just think about those that are in your peer group, and there are quite a few of them right now, very talented conductors, but your path, that very unique path you got here, does it make your musicality differ in a very marked way from maybe some of your other peers that are more traditional path, what they studied, what they've done? It has to shape you in a way that makes you a little bit different.
I don't know. I can only talk about myself. Well, about the way. Sure. The only truth for me is that everything is music. Yeah. Everything is music, and it's all about music, whether it's a piece by Roland Machaut or Orlando Villasso or Victoria, or whether it's a symphony by Anton Webern, which is a classic piece, or Stockhausen, whatever it is, it's about music. And for me, it's just different sides of the language. I'm not thinking I have different personalities or a different approach, because it's something universal and something really, really broad. And this is just, let's say, it's a response to my curiosity or to my wish, my almost desperate wish to know as much as I can and to embrace as many, but not because I think everything is fundamental, essential, important to know what's music about, but not only music, but also art in general. Mm-hmm. And so for me, this is a natural approach, and it has to be organic and personal. I mean, you cannot follow anyone else's path to be a conductor or be a painter or be a writer. And this is the only way I knew this is the only way I could do it, you know?
My only point there is that your path is so unique that there must be times, and there will be times also coming up in the future, where others of your peers who went to piano, violin, and then studied composition, conducting, studied all the great repertoire of the symphonic world, you're going to run up at times where you're going to say, I'm so happy, I know this body of music and how to approach this music, because you've been there, where they might have to do a little more research, or maybe even move away from it because they're not secure in that.
You know, I mean, I'm already feeling that very, very, very strongly. I feel very strongly that that was and that is my only way of doing things. There was a time I remember very well having conversations with Christopher Hogwood, a good friend, and a long time ago he told me, well, there will be a time that you will have to choose what you want to do, what you want to be known for.
Right.
And I always hated that. Always. Or when some people told me, you know, there's in Spanish saying who says, que mucho abarca poco aprieta. So it's like when you try to embrace a very big
object is too
something. Big one, yeah. So you cannot make force, you know, you cannot make pressure on it. So you need to choose one thing to really focus energy onto that. And I hate that. I hate that. And I was convinced that it could be possible to really be good or not good. I mean, to really know about everything. Yeah. And of course, that means a lot of work. But I mean, this is what we have to do. I mean, if you want to be honest and you have to take the responsibility for a composer or for a piece, you have to work a lot. And it's also been for a while, at some points, not easy to keep in the schedule, to keep in building, let's say, the calendar, building the career, to leave a place and room for everything. Because also, again, people tend to put you in a box of something. Eh? You are the conductor for this, or the artist for that, or the singer for this or the thing, and you need time to develop, not only to do one concert with one repertoire, and then you say, no, I'm doing 16th century music. No, you have to really develop and to keep a line. And so to keep this line in Renaissance music and in Baroque and Baroque instrument practice and new music and opera, of course, it's challenging. It's very, very, very challenging. I didn't know, I didn't care about this is going to be, let's say, I don't like this word, but it's going to be successful. I'm going to succeed artistically in keeping everything in a good level, healthy. Now I think I've reached a balance with everything, and the very only thing I'm happy and, let's say, proud in a way about the way I'm living now music and conducting is that I'm lucky enough to still do polyphony projects and to be this week with probably one of the best period instrument bands in the world, like Freiburg Baroque Orchestra, doing Mendelssohn and Schubert. And last week I was in Salzburg playing Boulez, Berio, Dalla Piccola. And and this is the thing I'm really happy about.
Well, from a historical perspective, which we don't have, is I think when people look back in a career like yours, yours will be actually the norm in 50 years that musicians like you can have this whole spectrum. WWFM's partnership with the Orchestra of St. Luke's will continue with a broadcast this week of a chamber concert given last year called Baroque Reworked, featuring music of Albinoni, Bach, Gabrielli, Scarlatti, and a new work by Phil Klein. That comes your way this Thursday night at 8, Israel Herman, your host. As we listen to the first movement of Georg Philipp Telemann's Horn Concerto in D Major, Stuart Rose soloist with the St. Luke's Chamber Ensemble, the Orchestra of St. Luke's 2012-2013 season kicks off with music of the Baroque October 14th at 2 p.m. and then October 17th and 19th at 7:30, all three concerts at the Morgan Library and Museum, a concert called Baroque in Pieces, featuring music of Albinoni, Bach, and Bieber. Flip to this orchestra. You first conducted the Orchestra of St. Luke's in 2011, and there was great excitement among the musicians. What do you recall from that concert?
From the concert?
Yeah, from that first time standing in front of this group.
Well, the first time standing in front of this group was in the rehearsal, and I remember that the rehearsals were, of course, always, it's a process not only to rehearse in the piece, but also to getting to know each other and to finding the right wavelength of communication, verbal, non-verbal, musical, in short. And it was a process because I think, like both the orchestra and me, they have clear and strong ideas and quite a strong power too. So to put together, it's not that the orchestra is just expecting from a conductor the Orchestra of St. Luke's expecting for a conductor to say what's going on. No, the orchestra has also a force and an opinion and also expectations, etc. So it was a very exciting and very interesting, even a dress rehearsal, because whatever is the occasion, whether it's the first time or the fifth time conducting with an orchestra, I never make any concession. I never try to, okay, let's try to fit smoothly in this first time and then we'll see. I cannot do that. If I hear something that I think is wrong, I think it can be better. Maybe not wrong, but it can be better, can be put together in a better way. We can move forward, we can go beyond. I cannot just say, okay, this is fine. So there was a lot of that kind of struggle in a nice way, in a positive way. But then the concert, everything exploded and everything blossomed, and there was a great force, a great excitement after the project. And I think we all felt that. And that was certainly a wonderful energy in the concert.
So the energy, the buzz, as we would say, continued with the musicians and the administration here, because obviously you're sitting here a year later and you are the principal conductor. When and how did you know that you would have this appointment? I mean, you said when we started, you know, things just happen to you and you move. I mean, at some point this had to say, oh, that's wonderful news that they're thinking of me. Or after that concert in 2011, did this orchestra hang in your mind as well? I mean, you hung in theirs, obviously. So.
I think we both were thinking about that possibility. Even before that concert, you know, because then 1 year earlier already had some contact with Katie Clark, the president of the orchestra, and went to some concerts, etc. And after this, and a couple of months after, I got this proposal. And I thought for a while, not a big while. And the exciting thing of it, one of the most exciting things of it, was that it was an immediate appointment. I mean, do you want to be part of the project? When? Now. You know? When do we start? Next summer. Because we already had the first two or three programs already set, so the dates were there. And this orchestra has an extraordinary varied and kaleidoscopic profile, so Orchestra St. Luke's don't devote all their season just about with symphony programs, but they do lots of chamber music, recitals, and choral works, etc. So they don't need the presence of a conductor like for 12 weeks a year or 14 weeks a year or something like that. It's not that heavy. It's very creative. For me, it's a very creative presence and then exchange of ideas and projects that we are having. And also the concerts, of course, but it's not a huge amount of concerts we have. So that made it easy. I didn't need to change anything in my schedule, in my life. There was adding to a wonderful relation that we started, adding responsibility, adding the chance of sharing ideas or adding something more thoughtful and creative. So sometimes I get frustrated about having to wait 3 years to send an appointment or to a project with an orchestra, or you go to a place with an orchestra and then they want you back there and you have to wait 2-3 years. This was immediate. And it feels now like I've been here for, I don't know, for a long period, but everything has been so intense since then. And this is exactly, for me, the right kind of energy I need.
I want to stay with St. Luke's, but I just want to hold back a few things on you first, then we'll come back. I don't find it a coincidence at all that, given your background and how you came to music, with parents that were not musical, your father's even like a civil servant type of thing, and you're coming to an orchestra that began in the 1970s, not as an orchestra, began as a chamber group without symphonic dreams and changed, and also just how they carry themselves, how they administrate themselves, how they make choices here. It seems to fit your personality, in my opinion, when you look at how you've made choices. Along the way, you've had some important influences. Harry Christophers, who I just had as a guest a few months ago, and of course you can go visit Harry right up the road in Boston with him, but the early music influence from him, or just the approach as you take it when you look at a score, having studied so much early music from the Renaissance or even before. That's an interesting theme that you have, is you approach a symphonic work, a Beethoven overture, a romantic concerto, the same way as if you were looking at a piece of music that doesn't have quite the specifics that you need as a conductor, the roadmap. So talk about that a little bit, because you're unique in that, and maybe how Harry guided you in how to look at scores the same way.
I think, you know, this is the polyphony, is the element, the natural element. Everything comes from there. You know, it's like like water, air, fire, earth, these elements. So the polyphony are the elements of music, any kind of later development, style, symphonic, chamber, vocal. This is the element. And everything is in there. Everything is in there. So you put together the four voices, you put together those lines and vertical horizontal relations and the tension between the vertical and the horizontal and the path, the structure, everything is there. And later when I open a Beethoven symphony or a Brahms concerto, it's still the same. It's notes and you have something like really very schematic forte piano and that's all. But when I look at that music, whether it's developed into a very rich and big orchestration or it stays in a more intimate setting, it's still the same. And phrasing rules and the needing to be organic and to breathe.
Your background in early music, yeah. Performance, are you allowed to open up a score from the classical romantic 20th century period and sort of strip away things so you can see just those elemental polyphonic lines?
That's
a unique gift, I think.
But you know, we don't have to forget that all those composers, they studied even Beethoven, mm-hmm. and they spend their lives writing academically fugues and counterpoint, and they knew that language. They managed or they handled that language as you and me speak, the same natural. And they added something personal to that, but that was the ground of it. So it's essential. And also, I don't know if it's related or not. Probably it is. But the fact that I've been always a very fast learner, mm-hmm. because I've been reading scores all my life, but singing internally, not playing the piano. So not with my fingers, but with my interior ear, my interior voice, and trying to put together all voices in my head and in my ear. So I've been reading scores constantly since I was a teenager. So that, for me, that way of approaching a score related to singing and to this polyphonic dimension is, for me, the normal one.
The other mentors, and you can tie this into Orchestra of St. Luke's because you'd mentioned communication before, is when you do modern music, you mm-hmm. need a lot of communication with your players. And it was Peter Etvos and Pierre Boulez, two of the great thinking minds of the 20th century, the last 50 years, Boulez even further than that. Mm-hmm. Lucerne Festival, you're doing Stockhausen and Group, and they give you this kind of push, this really advantageous push. A couple interesting words you use with Boulez, which is you learned from him generosity, mm-hmm. which is an interesting word to do with a conductor, and also honesty. And maybe tie those into communication and even bring it into an orchestra like the Orchestra of St. Luke's, all professionals, very independent thinking professionals in this group. Those lessons you learned from Boulez, how do you bring them to fruition in your conducting?
Well, I think generosity is about giving the music and giving the musicians a space. And never, even if you have, as a conductor, as an artist, you have a strong opinion, a strong view, that you have to first give the space. Pierre Boulez, when he works, of course, he's someone who, as you said, is one of the strongest minds in musical history, yeah. I would say. But when he's rehearsing, whether it's a big symphony orchestra, whether he's rehearsing with a new music ensemble, he's, let's say, economy and the way he approaches and he leaves the stage, he gets energy from a very apparently passive attitude. Because he leaves the space and then he just tries to help and to organize all that. And that's it. And the honesty comes also from that, because it's about the text, it's about the music, it's about the composer. You will never hear from Boulez or see in a rehearsal something about a new idea or... No, it's just putting together the music and say this is crescendo goes until here, not too much. The diminuendo goes until pianissimo, not mezzo piano or the opposite. Mm-hmm. Exactly trying to bring out all the elements of the score and to put mm-hmm. them together. And then the musicians will make music with that. They are playing. And they make something unique with energy, and in a magic way, it gets something like with warmth and with organicity.
You communicate with an orchestra with words, which should be few, but you also share something in common with Mr. Boulez, is you communicate with your hands. Now, you say it's because, as we would say, you're a southpaw, you're a lefty, mm-hmm. but you conduct without a baton, as Boulez always did. Your hands communicating, that's different from verbal, it's different from following the baton, and you're very comfortable with using your hands to
I am.
Shape every aspect of the score.